いうことで、ではこれから、前回の続きでピーター・ジーナさん のトーク、後半をお届けしたいと思います。で、先ほども紹介しましたようにピーター・ジーナさんは1943年生まれ、イギリスの、ミュージックマネージャー、レコードプロデューサーで、私が1月に、イギリスにいた時にインタビューをさせていただきました。で、私はイギリスの調査の中でピーターさんにお会いしたんですが、ノッティングヒルという場所の1960年代の、コミュニティ活動とかカウンターカルチャーのアンダーグラウンドの運動とかそういうのを調べている中で、ロンドンフリースクールという活動に出会い、そこに参加していたピーター・ジーナさんにお話を伺っているという形です。で、2回前にジョイ・ボイさんっていう、アメリカ人のレコードプロデューサーの方にもお話を伺っていますが、ジョイ・ボイさんも、ロンドンフリースクールに関わっていて、このロンドンフリースクールに関わっていたアーティスト活動家たち、まあ、当時は20歳代前半だったりすると思うんですが、あるいは20代半ばぐらいかな、そういう人たちがその後こうアンダーグラウンドをこういろいろこう活動展開していき、いつの間にかそれが非常に、イギリスのポップカルチャーへとつながり、前衛的なこう音楽がこうどんどんこうポップカルチャーにつながっていく、そのあたりの時期、そのあたりのお話をピーター・ジーナさんにも、ジョイ・ボイスさんにも伺いました。で、今日のトークはその後半として、私がその音楽と社会というか政治とどうつながっているのかっていうのが気になって、そのあたりをお伺いをしています。ピーターさんがロンドンフリースクールに関わった時にはそういうこう自分たちの世代っていうのは戦争も終わって、戦地に直接行くことがなく、教育も受けられ、職も得て、そういうある意味豊かな世代だけど、実際の社会にはこうまだそういうその自分たちが受けている恩恵とは違う、厳しい社会状況があったり、あるいは移民の人たちのコミュニティがこう差別されていたりとか、こういろんな問題がある。その問題をロンドンフリースクールを通しての活動を通してこう地域の中から考えていこうと、ピーターさんはされたというようなお話、あるいは先週は立石さんに来ていただいたんですが、なぜかというと立石さんはピンクフロイドのすごいファンで、それでピンクフロイドの最初のマネージャーであるピーター・ジーナさんのインタビューを楽しみにしていて、かつ立石さんにがの依頼で、かつての依頼でピーター・ジーナさんに立石と叫んでくれと言われて、それをもう苦労して立石と叫んでもらったとか、そういうことがありましたので、立石さんに出演をしていただきました。で、なので先週はそのピンク・フロイドとピーター・ジーナのお話とか、が中心になっていましたが、今週はその以後の話が出てきます。で、次の話は先々週のジョイ・ボーイの話の時にも出てきたハイド・パークのフリーコンサート、この話が出てきますので、その前後のトークの前後に、フリーコンサートでその時にこう出演したアーティスト、からムシさんが、娘のピーター・ジーナさんのムシさんが選んでくれた2曲をトーク、ピーター・ジーナのトークに挟みたいと思います。最初の曲はブラインドフェイスで In the Presence of the Lord、これは2回目のハイドパークので歌われ参加していたバンドみたいですね。これはあえて、エリック クランプトンと
クランプトン、はい、
一緒にやってるのを選んでくださったんですが、で先週の話もあったんですが、ピーター・ジーナさんはケンブリッジの出身で、こういろんなつながりの中でケンブリッジ人脈というのが出てくるんですが、このエリック・クランプトンとはもう大学時代その前からの友達でみたいな、なんでそんな 簡単に友達なのみたいな、出てくる名前がみんなウィキペディアに載ってるんですよね。あれおかしいなって、そんななんか有名になる前からそういう人脈があったなんて、逆にそういう人脈があるからこそこう駆け上っていける階段もあったんだなとか、そんなことを選手は想像してたんですが、で、まあ、エリック・クランプトンと一緒にブラインド・フェイス・イン・ザ・プレゼンス・オブ・ザ・ロード、で、あとの曲がロイ・ハーパー、この人は長年されてるんで、皆さんの中でも聞いた方がいらっしゃるんじゃないかなと思いますが、アナザ・デイっていう、で、これもピーター・ジーナが長年こうあのマネジメントをされてきたアーティストで、あのハイド・パークのショーにはしばしば参加されています。で、この2人の間に挟まって、ピーターさんのトークをお届けするんですが、注目していただきたいのはこのハイド・パークのコンサートがどうして実現できたのかという、それをそのちょっとしたあのなんていうか意外なエピソードを話してくれています。ちょっとあのびっくりでややこしいので、後で竜太さんともゆっくりお話をしたいと思うので、まずはではこの2曲と、そして、その間にピーター・ジーナさんの、トークをお届けします。トムさん、 Music 2 and R1 and Music 3お願いします。どうぞ。
As your generation, you could go to university, you could job, and salary, etc. So you are involved in the Notting Hill a little social issues, as social issues. But music,
In university, I mean, I was very involved with people involved with social administration and with housing policy and employment policy and things like that, which was about the responsibility of society to its members. And so in a sense, I think that I, and I suspect a lot of us, had a feeling that we were the lucky people. We hadn't had to fight the war. We'd all were too young for the war. We were coming out of the sort of post-war sort of recession. So things were, money was starting to become a bit more plentiful. We had an education, we were able to get, there was full employment, there was no problem getting a job. You know, it was a very good time to be young, you know. So I was able to rent a house and to buy a house, cost, I think it was £3,000.
Yeah, but that kind of, you were interested in the social issue and your music activity. How related inside of you?
Well, in a sense, the music was part of the social activity. In a sense, the sort of involvement in music, you know, that was why the link with the West Indian community was through music and reggae and an awareness of the importance of black music in jazz and so on. And therefore, there was a sort of, I suppose, a feeling of white guilt. You know, here we are, I'm white and I'm educated in Cambridge and now I'm teaching in university and these people here have come from the West Indies and they've got nothing. And I think, in a sense, a lot of us in the London Free School had some variation of that sort of perception that we were, you know, we were the post-war generation. We hadn't had to fight in the war. We hadn't had to fight in the Korean War. You know, we had full employment. We had social security. It was coming out of a very restrictive time where there'd been rationing and things were scarce and so on. I mean, I couldn't get records. Records were difficult to get early on, you know, when I was sort of 15, 16, you know, you you know, a lot of records hadn't arrived. When I went to America first, when I was 17, one of the great things, I could go and get records and buy records and things. Because there were limits on, you know, how many records could be imported because of the economic conditions. You know, so the government wouldn't let people just buy lots of records because there was problems with the currency and problems with having any money. It's a bit like, you know, a very mild version of Venezuela. You know, there was a very difficult period. We'd be bombed, we had to rebuild, you know, I mean, like Japan has had a lot of that stuff, yeah. You know, that they have to start again. You know, it's those sorts of things gives you a feeling towards the other people and things.
So for you, the music is not only for fun, but your contribution to society.
Music is a sort of glue to stick us all together, yeah. To stick people together. In a sense, it brings people together. I think that's what I liked about it, apart from just the music. But there was what was in terms of the London Free School, it was seen as a thing which bound people together, you know. I mean, we like reggae and all that stuff, and then, you know, it was just, you know, just up the road from where we were working was where Island Records was, and which was Bob Marley and all the stuff that Chris Blackwell was bringing in from the West Indies. And he was living in the same area. You know, so there was that sort of link with the West Indian community and with the black music culture.
So how was you organize the Rolling Stones concert at Hyderabad?
Yeah.
It's also the one kind of your social activity?
Yeah. I mean, that was with my wife. We went to... went out for a walk, I think, with my son when he was in a pram. And there was a bandstand, a round bandstand, which had a few deck chairs around it. And no one sitting in them, but there were a few deck chairs there. And the people we knew that what people played, there were military bands or the police bands or, you know, they were brass bands. And small, and they would do little concerts on Saturday afternoon. So we'd also read in the Melody Maker, which was very important because they had someone in San Francisco, so they were aware of the West Coast. And I'd read that there were these free concerts in Golden Gate Park, and that was part of the hippie thing. Now, if you smoked dope and you liked the sort of stuff music we liked, we were very tied into that whole American hippie new range, you know, like the Fugs. And we also were in contact with Warhol's. What was the band? Warhol's band, you know, with Lou Reed and all that. Velvet Underground. There were contacts with Velvet Underground. John Cale was from England and from Wales, but he was also in the same sort of group. I phoned him up about whether he wanted a manager, you know, because someone had the number. And there was a cassette going round of the early Velvet Underground. And then there was Joe Boyd, who moved from America, was working in England. So there was quite a lot of communication, you know, and the American record companies were opening up in the UK in the 60s because after the Beatles and the Stones, the American record companies wanted to know about what else was coming on. So it's very important for them to check out, and that's why people would come and look at the Floyd and other bands, you know. But there was a sort of linking, and there was an awareness, if you're successful, the band could get to America, you know, and you could make a living. So that becoming a manager of a band wasn't... I could imagine that I could leave my job and go on managing the band and be able to live and support my wife and kids. I think there's a perception that the British music business was exploding all around the world, so there were opportunities. So 5 years earlier, in 1960, there was no hope for a British band to work outside of the, quote, British Empire. You know, you could, if you were an English, successful English band, you could work in the, you know, in Australia and New Zealand, South Africa, you know, those sorts of places. But you couldn't work. There was no one was interested in English bands in Germany or in France or America. It just happened that my grandfather, before I was born, he'd left my grandmother and had gone away with this Labour Party politician called Jenny Lee. And she was, everybody, you know, the Labour Party loved her. She was very pretty. And my grandfather was carried away and took her away, and they went off. And he then had a heart attack and died. So I never knew about this when I was a kid. It was only later I heard about it. But I did by then, by the time I was, you know, after I left university, I knew that there had been this thing, and that he'd been an MP, an important member of the Labour Party. So, and Jenny Lee had become a part of the Harold Wilson's government. And she was in charge of arts and sciences. She was the first Minister for Culture, really, in the UK.
Oh, really?
And so I wrote to her knowing that. Mm. And having seen that there was a thing, I said, why don't we do a concert in Hyde Park? Mm. Free concerts for young people, not just in bandstands. And then I said to them, by the way, my grandfather was Frank White, who had been her partner. You know, they were going to be married, you know, but except he was already married, my grandfather, but he was, you know, he was going to run away probably. My grandfather was a piece of work. I mean, he'd worked for the Soviet Union, all sorts of things. But anyway, so I wrote to her about this, about whether we could do this, just wrote to the ministry which controlled the Hyde Park, and she never replied.
Mm.
But within two, 3 days of writing the letter, I got a phone call.
Oh, really? Oh.
From the ministry. Mm. Not from her.
Mm.
I never spoke to her. Never saw her. But the ministry, she said, oh, these people have been... I'm sure what happened, she said to her people in her office, these people have been to me saying, wouldn't it be a good idea if we had some music for young people in Hyde Park? I think that's a jolly good idea. Why don't we do that? There are these people who want to do it.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So the government.
So the government did it. I mean, they got in touch with us. Uh-huh. I got in touch with her, and then she got her people to get in touch with us. Mm-hmm. And that's when we started the concerts in Hyde Park. And they suggested where we should do it, mm-hmm. and they fixed the police and everything.
Amazing.
But it's very English. Very English, all family connections, and I was clearly, you know, an educated person. I wasn't some sort of, you know, kid from the scene. Oh, I wanted to have a rock band, you know. It was like, it was more cultural, you know.
Uh-huh. So you know very well the underground. Also, you know the British.
Well, my father was a vicar.
Mm-hmm. So that.
You know, and. You know, politics, I've been brought up with politics. Mm-hmm. You know, my father was a clergyman, but he was also very political and was involved in campaigns. I went on the Aldermaster marches, and he was the Anglican, that's the Church of England, the Anglican Pacifist Association. Mm-hmm. He was all during the war, he'd been a pacifist. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't go to war as a chaplain, even against Hitler, you know, who is very opposed to. And he worked during the war in a prison as a prison chaplain. And he'd had to see two people be executed, which moved him a lot. It was an important driver on him. My mother was brought up by her mother, who was very political because of her husband. And she was a sort of graduate from 1906 or something, you know, very early graduate. My mother was a graduate from Cambridge in 1930 something, you know, from Girton, the very early days. I had bad feet, so I was looked after the baggage. I couldn't really walk all that way. My feet wouldn't have taken it.
Kettle's on, the sun has gone, another day, she offers me Tibetan tea, on a flower tray, she's at the door. She wants to score. she didn't need to say.